Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Independent Business News Network. I am Don Allen, and we have some special guests who are calling in either here on Zoom or live on Blog Talk Radio. We're broadcasting live from Blog Talk Radio. We'd like to welcome everyone on this Wednesday night at 7:01 p.m. And I know that some of you are getting ready to turn in and do what you need to do, turn on the evening news, the cable networks, and get freaked out of your mind behind what's going on in the news, the riots, the burning, and the other things like that. But let me see. I'm waiting for someone to call to join me. Let me see. Caller 202 area code.
I'm here.
There. Okay. Who am I speaking with?
Well, this is CJ, Don. How are you?
Oh, CJ, I'm so sorry. You know, I was affecting someone else.
Surprise, surprise, here I am.
Okay. But CJ, okay,
yes.
Okay, you have me tripping right now. You have me tripping. Oh, okay, there we go. We got you right there. Perfect, perfect. Was there a challenge with Zoom?
Yeah, it wasn't accepting my ID number. So I was just roaming around in Stratosphere.
Okay, that's not right. We're not going to tolerate that at all. So welcome, CJ, to the show, and I appreciate you being here. We're also waiting for Marvin Sims to join us here any minute. There's a lot of graduation ceremonies tonight, virtual, and a lot of staffs, including myself. I was online watching some of the pomp and circumstance, for lack of a better term. It's really different right now, but the videos that I've seen out there from different graduations from the different schools are really wonderful. Really enjoying it. We have a lot of strange things going on, and it's kind of a different normal, and people aren't really used to, you know, being shuttered inside, having a curfew here in the Twin Cities, and a lot of the other stuff that's going on. And CJ, I'd like to get your thoughts. You wanted to talk last week or earlier in the week. I was going to do a Sunday show, and I want to bring you on board right now and just have you to break down what you think is going on and some of your points to this issue or whatever you'd like to talk about. Please go ahead.
Well, first, thank you for having me this evening. I think we're looking at a multitude of things that are head on and coming to the tip of the spear. One, we all grieve for George Floyd and his family, and you know, we've seen what happened on television, on video, and these are continual repeat efforts coupled with a large group of African Americans being unemployed, a lot of young students not being in college, a lot of middle-aged students and younger students not being at home, the uncertainty of COVID-19 and its impact in the African American community. And with a plethora of information going out that's moving very rapidly and not understanding that information, with experts contradicting each other,
yes,
it all just came to a head. And it's like in the wintertime, you know, when it's snow, and if it's snow and can't remove that snow in 3 days, people get cabin fever. So you've actually locked people up in some places for 3 months, some 2.5 months, kids at home,
yes,
you're not working, parents trying to educate their kids and do homeschooling who are not equipped to do homeschooling. It's very challenging and maintain your living and trying to run your business or do your work at home, and it's a lot. And so there's the mental health issues that have been brought onto the community by pandemic, plandemic, whichever one you term you want to use, and
yes.
the visualization of another African American man dying at the hands of excessive use of force. All of those came to head, and this is what you have. And I think now I'm seeing hopefully where we can get to a peaceful transition in the streets. I'm seeing where, you know, people are defying curfews, in which I wish they wouldn't defy curfews, but because you're still having that criminal element still embedded in with even after those who defy curfews. And so it makes it very challenging, very hot ball. And hopefully as these days go forward, these young individuals and everybody, I'm hoping more elders go out and join to have a level-headed voice with the young individuals who want to yell and scream. Because when you yell and scream, you don't get anything done. You don't get anything accomplished. And that's even in your household when you're having an argument. You got to have, what, count 20 seconds? Or, you know, because you know if your wife yell at you, you yell back, and then it goes to a whole nother level, and then the cops can be called. So it calls for level-headedness and calmness and peace and tranquility to advocate and to get your words. And so hopefully we can continue to see that.
Yeah, and I agree 100% with your analysis of what's going on out there. We're seeing a lot of videos on social media and other places, especially on the dark web, of people robbing high-end stores, the Louis Vuitton store out in California, other places, East Coast, just kind of going in and doing all this different stuff. What do you think should be done at this point? And we're talking with C.J. Jordan, a political strategist here in the Midwest, and someone that has the ear to the wall, for lack of a better term, to kind of find out what's going and to discuss the plight and maybe the continuing mission of Black Minnesotans or Black people in general, what we should do right now. That's the foundation or the thesis of this conversation, because there's been a lot of craziness going on, as you know, and I know some of you guys want to get into the Zoom meeting, so I am copying the link, and I will send it to you via a message so that you can get on this and be on some kind of TV here, I guess they call it. So it should be pretty interesting. Our call-in number, just let me get people know, our dial-in number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. If you want to call, talk to us, have a conversation, or you just challenge me or Mr. CJ, it doesn't matter. We'd like you to take part in this. We found out today that Attorney General of the State of Minnesota, former Congressman Keith Ellison, ended up recharging one officer and charging the other three officers. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, based on the evidence that, you know, America has seen, upgrading the charges is a standard procedure. When a person is arrested, you can start with probable cause, continue to, you know, do your investigation. You can start with third degree, move up. And then now there's the question if it's enough premeditated evidence there to get him first degree murder. And so I think, you know, it was right for the state to finally take it out of the local DA's hands. The fact that he was moving so slow, and it's been almost 2 weeks going into, you know, the second week on the other three officers, it was rightfully so to turn it over. I do have concerns that when you have the former congressman who is the top law enforcement officer, has been a supporter and ally of Antifa, and the fact that he did not call out Antifa doing for the riots, and the first time he had the opportunity to speak standing beside the governor, his words were, you know, do not take your anger out on the National Guard, but take your anger out on the police. And the governor did not have him clarify that, restate that, or say that's, you know, I don't want you to harm our law enforcement officers. So his words were not helpful in the need of time of calm. And so I agree with the civil rights review of the police department. And I'm also agree with the fact that the president has sent in and asked for expedited review from the federal charges of the civil rights violations of, you know, George Floyd's rights. All of those things move expeditiously on the federal level. I think for those who are in, you know, your city, I think the decision has to be made when it comes to election. You know, we can't vilify black Republicans anymore. There are some that I don't agree with. I don't agree with what they're stating now in the midst of, you know, this chaos, and trying to use George Floyd's past as a reason to take away from what the overall incident and his murder has, you know, put forth in the public sphere and this conversation that we must have. And I don't agree where we should vilify black Republicans who, you know, want to bring solutions, want to offer solutions, want to embrace the community. And I want to, and I'm deeply concerned that when we're in the middle of COVID, somehow or another, the politics has gotten into George Floyd's funeral, that they're going to elevate the vice president to be there on a national stage to offer some words when, irrespective whether you like this president or not, he is still our president, and he should be afforded, or someone from his administration should be afforded to be there, since they're doing an open, large memorial in Houston, and they're doing a piece in Minneapolis, and I don't know what family member is in Charlotte, but they're going to, I mean, to Raleigh, North Carolina, but they're doing the same thing in Raleigh. So I'm concerned about that, because now you've interjected the 2020 campaign into a funeral.
Exactly. And from what I see, it's all around very political. But let's back up to the beginning. Mike Freeman is pressured. He's pressured by community groups from all walks of life. He's pressured by the media. The media is there reporting every 20 minutes, you know, about this. It's just inundated, saturated, spam. And so he ends up charging the gentleman with third-degree murder, manslaughter. And anybody that can read understands that, okay, if you charge someone with third-degree manslaughter, that's like you're in the car, like CJ, you and I are in the car, and your husband's in the back seat, and he's playing with a gun, and it goes off, and it kills someone on the bus stop outside of the car. Well, we're free.
Right.
We can walk away. Whereas, you know, the guy in the back seat has got some consequences. So what Mike Freeman did was racist in itself, gave him the lesser charge. And I think that's another reason why they bumped it up to this the state level with Ellison. And I'm very interested to see the turn of events, because sources tell me that one of the four police officers that were holding Mr. Floyd down is a rookie. And he said some things that probably would have saved Mr. Floyd's life. But the veteran cop there didn't pay any attention to him. So I'm very interested in negotiations, the plea bargaining, and all this stuff, because someone's going to crack, because I don't think those other police officers want to go to jail for one bad officer or two bad officers, depending on how this all turns out. And so with that said, go ahead, please.
No, I'm saying you're absolutely correct. Go ahead, and then I chime in.
Okay, and with that said, on another point, the legal process has been slow and lagging a little bit here. And it seems more there was some pandering going on in the beginning between Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Fry and the coroner and also Mike Freeman. And to have that lesser charge presented first is a slap in the face to the black community in general, everybody actually. And so now you have people hyped up, oh, they went from third degree to second degree. And in reality, it shouldn't have happened in the first place. It did. Someone's dead that shouldn't be dead. And again, we're in Minneapolis talking about changing policy. The Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights has remained silent. I'm not talking about the state. I'm talking about the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department led by Velma Corbell, been absolutely silent through this whole thing, which is usually, well, it's the normal for that group. And I would have thought that on behalf of the family that this is a automatic switch to turn on a civil rights investigation. I know in the Minneapolis Charter, rules and regulations, statutes, whatever you want to call them, there is cause for a civil rights department in either city and the state to automatically go in. Most of the time, people that go into the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights have had some kind of trouble with an employer, with something that they felt they were discriminated against or their civil rights were violated. There's a bunch of paperwork that you have to fill out. And I remember Mr. Edwards and I, many years ago, we had an attorney that worked down at the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, and he had left and he kind of trashed his name a little. And he was nice enough to call us up to let us know that Mr. Edwards and Mr. Allen, you know all those old civil rights files? They said they were catching up in the city of Minneapolis. And we said, yeah, we heard about that. He said they shredded them.
Right. And
he told us that live. I have recordings. Okay.
Right. So, and yeah. Well, go ahead, Don. You know, let me just interject. You know, what you share here right now, I am deeply concerned. I am a former officer with the Columbus branch NAACP. Former vice chair of the Ohio Civil Rights Coalition. And one of the things I don't share a lot publicly is during the Lucasville riots in Ohio with the maximum security prison. I helped negotiate and watched over the release of the other prison guards during that turbulent time. You are absolutely correct. I am astounded and I am very, very ashamed right now that I've not seen the local branch of the NAACP begin to question and launch an independent investigation and to call not just for the state but the city to do an investigation. And I think what we have is politics at play when you have a senator who is being vetted for the vice president's spot. Because that means you have to go in and review and open her files when she was DA. And probably doing the vetting, I don't know if they locked them down, you know, doing the vetting process. But now those files have to be open. And the state doesn't necessarily have to go into old files, but just launch kind of a periphery of saying a perfunctory response. And she has said she's not going to get out. James Clyburn, the number three, the highest ranking person in the Congressional Black Caucus, has stated, you know, her past as DA is troubling, but it does not disqualify her for being continuing to be vetted for vice president. So I am deeply concerned by the complicity of the black elected leaders who are quiet right now.
Yeah, and so
locally.
Funny that you say that because I'm looking at from a news angle from what I do. I teach and I do news. I don't go out and protest and I try to support things in other ways, but I'm looking at this and I'm seeing different groups of people that should be doing some kind of news. I think we have someone in here. Oh, no, not yet. Okay. That used to do these shows on these radio stations and other places, and a whole group of different people are kind of distributing mixed messages. Like the gentleman that had the truck, the semi truck going down 35W, the word on the street was that he was going to run over all these black people. They pulled him out of the truck. He got slapped up a little. They tried to cover it and say that they were helping him. And you could clearly see the young lady steal his bag out of the back of the truck and go down the side of the truck with it. But the thing is, the city of Minneapolis and the state did not cordon off the freeway when they were supposed to at an earlier time. I believe him. I saw his interview, and I believe that he just, you know, it was an unfortunate mistake. But we can't put that on him. But I say that to say there's a lot of misinformation going out on the web. There's a lot of hyperbole and things that shouldn't really, you know, I push people's buttons. I know that. I love doing that. But
you've always been a provocateur, and I love you.
Yeah, oh, thank you very much. And like the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, mm-hmm. I don't know how many times that Mr. Edwards and I had been down to City Hall to address them, to talk, or the number of different missteps they have taken for black Minnesotans here, and just, you know, one horrendous case, and I'll just share this with you, and this is kind of going to explain the matrix of how the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights works. There was a young guy that was working at what used to be a Rainbow off Hiawatha and Lake Street. It might still be there, but it might be something else. I don't know. This was many years ago. And his boss had him to go out and get some carts and bring them in. And there was a lady in a really nice car, a white female, that backed up. And he kept pushing the carts. And she knew the manager there. She went in and says, hey, that guy was blocking me to get out of from the parking lot. And when she went outside, she spit on him. And he went back in and told the boss. This is documented. And the boss fired him off the word of this lady. And he didn't disrespect her. And this is documented. He didn't disrespect her. It's written down. She didn't say he disrespected him, but yet, when he took it to the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, he did not get any remedy at all whatsoever. Matter of fact, I think those were one of the files that were shredded. Getting back to Minneapolis, black Minnesota, what's happening here. Malcolm X said we'd be marching 50 years later, and we are. There was a difference in protest between Martin Luther King, the way he did things, and the things that Malcolm X did. Just like there was things done differently back when W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington were around. And so now we have a situation in the Twin Cities here where black leadership needs to step up. They need to have this conversation with families, with the community, with the elected officials, because even, CJ, in the black community, I mean, the preachers, I have no problem. They're doing what they do. Their flocks are unemployed for the most part, jobs cut off, and the churches have been, and this might be a good thing for the black church because it's going to make it stronger. And so people are relying on that backbone, especially in the black community, that backbone of religion, the backbone of that church building, the backbone of that man of God who is expressing that everything is going to be okay, et cetera, et cetera. And so
absolutely.
This pandemic. Go ahead.
I said, you know.
Please go ahead.
Again, here's, you know, I think tomorrow, and not even tomorrow, it's about tonight, because if the mayor does not launch an investigation, a civil rights investigation, and the local branch of the NAACP does not call for one, much less do an independent one. And I call for the resignation mm-hmm. of all of those, you know, officers, both at the NAACP and for the mayor and those who had that, you know, Human Civil Rights Commission for the city. That's the first step. The second step, you know, mm-hmm. my mother has been talking about since we've been locked down about the seven plagues from the Old Testament. And we're, you know, in this time of peace, I know we, in chaos, a lot of people bought a lot of Bibles. The question is, how many of them are actually reading and practicing it? And I say that because at the end of the day, like you said, a lot of people are out of work, so you can't do your tithing, right? You traditionally do. And some pastors are on Facebook, some are wanting to stay in, but how many have pitched a tent to do old tent revivals to get people outdoors the way we did before we, back in the summertime revivals, you know how it was. You come around the road, you hear the music going and the fans are flying and people, you know, passing out. Old tent revivals. We have to get back that because we don't have school prayer in our schools anymore because the left took that out. We don't have In God We Trust on that money anymore because under Obama we wanted that. Even in 2008 in Charlotte, we saw the Democrats vote to take God out of the platform of the Democratic Party. So we have to get back to, as humans, as children of God who were made in his image, that God is the head of our household. That is what we must do so that we can have clear clarity, so that we can have peace of mind with the protesters, and that these young individuals hear our elders and move with clarity. Because you can't continue to tear up the community, because at the end of the day, you, like myself, and the one thing when we talk about W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington always preached about self-reliance and entrepreneurship.
Yes.
And education. It was two different models of how we go. Why you have Dr. Ken Harris, the new president of the National Business League. It is the oldest black chamber that's now moving and grooving, doing tremendous great things, that putting things in place for our black-owned businesses. I've served in the Trump administration working on issues important to black-owned businesses, and to see people's livelihood. Because, you know, Don, traditionally we have, you know, less access to capital. Most of things, we take our savings. Most of us, we use angel investors, friends, and family to get our businesses up and going. We know that when we talk about education and those businesses, we're leveraging our homes to put our children in college, to start our business with collateral. You know, you're seeing your dreams go up, and you're seeing young individuals who are not understanding that, you know what, all of this that you've done has been for naught.
Yeah.
And you burned down. Where are you going now to the local laundromat to clean your clothes? All the, you can't get food. There's only one grocery store. You can't wash your clothes. You can't get your medicine. And if you are a diabetic, and we know the first of the month, what comes in the first of the month? If you're a retiree, you're getting your check. If you're a retiree on disability, you're getting your check. The next check comes next week on the 15th, the 1st and the 15th. So the people at the first of the month didn't get a chance to shop. So you know definitely the people on the 15th are not going to be able to shop. And people don't have no food right now. So when you don't have any food, what happens?
Yeah, you get desperate. You do things that you wouldn't normally do.
Right, you wouldn't normally do.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, you know, now in St. Paul here on the Midway, Cup Foods, and Target are open. And but I've looked at it for the first couple of days because I have a 7-year-old who is in love with apple juice. And, you know, I was planning on going to the store, blah, blah, blah. And I went over there and just to look at the devastation and to see what we have been trained to do generationally. You know, you're not going to go into the state legislature and talk to the Republicans, the Democrats, or whoever and change policy in your favor. But, no, you've been trained to stay out of the intellectual realm of legislative policy and burn your neighborhood. Now, I'm not mad at him. What happened to George Floyd is despicable. It's heinous.
Absolutely.
You know, but he should have never died. This is not the first time the police have choked out and tased and killed somebody. But yet, in Minneapolis, especially in Minneapolis, St. Paul's not that bad, but Minneapolis, you have an ongoing. Mr. Edwards fought Minneapolis for 40 years over the same shooting, black men getting shot by Minneapolis police officers, be it they in the wrong or in the right or whatever, what happened, you know. Not only Jamar Clark. See, they took Jamar Clark, which was unfortunate. Mr. Edwards, we talked about this all the time. And I want to share this with our listeners. They took Jamar Clark and made Jamar Clark at the time the kind of the poster person for police brutality. And Mr. Edwards wasn't too excited about that. And then you have David Cornelius Smith. And this is a very interesting story that I want to share with my listeners. David Cornelius Smith was a member of the YMCA. He went downtown Minneapolis a few years back. I think it might have been 2015 or 14, but somewhere in there. You know, these days are like a blur. And he's playing basketball, and a young lady asked him to move or stop or something else was going in, and he kept playing. So she called the police on him. A few officers came up there, roughhoused him, put him to the ground, and tased him and strangled him to death. You know, his family was awarded $3 million. And
you know,
this is really terrible, but a police call on or for a black is usually a death sentence.
And
that's unfortunate.
And here's, it's very unfortunate. Here's the reality, and here's the oxymoron. And I hope your listening audience, and particularly those who are local that are voicing their concerns, particularly about excessive use of force and the immunity often given. Most people don't realize that Joe Biden in 1991, I remember where I was doing, you know, the Rodney King riots and beating when he got beat on the streets. I don't know where you were, but I know you remember that and the riots. Joe Biden introduced legislation called a Bill of Rights for Police Officers. It's a federal law. And he included that into the 1994 criminal justice bill, the crime bill, three strikes you out, mandatory sentences, three strikes you out, which produced mass incarcerations of black and Hispanic men. What that bill also did was grant additional protections to make it harder to get rid of bad police officers off the force. It gave them additional union protocols in order to remove them. So how can we talk about Joe Biden coming to the funeral of George Floyd when the protection of this bad officer who had 18, a record of 18 counts against him on the excessive use of force against black individuals. And
oh,
he was
never beating the hell out of
and never reprimanded. The Joe Biden's 1994 crime bill called, and I will send it to you so you can make it available for your
listeners. I just posted the 1994 crime law that Joe Biden helped write. It's explained in detail. So it's from Vox, so it's pretty good. So, it's posted on my Facebook page, and if you want to go ahead and check that out, you should really check it out because it's very interesting that this guy who wrote this controversial crime bill in 94 that, like CJ said, gave, you know, all this stuff, all this extra powers and protections to police is running for president of the United States. And we have some people in our community, black folks, excited, which is troubling. And here goes the deal. I don't care if you're a Democrat. I don't care if you're a Republican. I don't care if you're green or whatever. Okay? That's whatever. Okay? But what I do care about is that there's enough black people in Minnesota, around the United States, that we should control 50% of every elected office, of the elective offices here in Minnesota, at least. I mean, that's kind of
right.
asking a lot, but we have enough support. We have enough black people here in Minnesota that you can have, you know, you can have a black House of Representatives and a white Senate, or mix it up half and half. Hispanic, Hispanic Latino brothers in there. Get the Asian brothers in there. You know, get the Somali brothers in there. Well, they're getting in there. Get all these people in and get them elected. The thing that I am troubled about is that folks sit back and they expect this leadership, whatever it is. I'm not saying Democrat, Republican. I already know. I'm a conservative. That falls under the R, and I know they haven't been cordial and diplomatic with me at all whatsoever. Do I care? No. I have thick skin. But I read a lot. I analyze a lot, and a lot of people do, and so you sit back in the cut and you watch. In
right.
2016,
you can't.
In 2016, CNN, MSNBC, who else? Every left-leaning mainstream media cable network was telling the black community, because, again, we're stupid, and we don't own any news outlets, and so they can mold the narrative, but they're telling us Hillary Clinton will win. Hillary Clinton will win, okay? She's higher in the ratings than Trump. And I'm looking, from a media person who worked in radio, television, and newspaper, I'm looking at this tremendous surge in coverage every 5 seconds of president of then candidate Trump. And I'm looking at maybe, okay, let's take a pie here. The pie has 10 pieces. Candidate Trump had 9 pieces, and candidate Clinton had 1 piece of that pie. As far as it pertains to advertising and all this follow-up news. Now, what happened in July, July of 2016, the mainstream media had thought they were going to use Donald Trump like they used Ronald Reagan. You know, this Republican dude wasn't a politician, and, you know, Reagan was an actor, you know, first. And they thought they were going to have this darling, like i.e. after Kennedy and all these other folks. And once they figured out that Trump was driving his own boat, they started to turn against him. But that was October 31st, 2016. It was too late. They already branded him across the United States. There was nothing that was going to happen. There was nothing that was going to happen that was going to let Hillary Clinton win in 2016. Nothing.
Absolutely.
But yet, the
media.
Go ahead, please.
Well, they're repeating the exact same thing that they're doing now. And I get that folks might not like the president's tweet. The president speaks in short phrases, not long sentences. I get all of that. But if you just stack up the policy, I can tell you, when I was at the Department of Commerce in this administration, this White House signed off on the approval for the establishment of a fund for $1 billion for black-owned businesses. The former director,
mm-hmm.
Henry Childs, took that idea that I got approved and tapped the National Association of Investment Firms, which are the black and minority-owned firms, for them to get via a grant to raise the money for us to have $1 billion capital access fund for monies for black-owned businesses. Most people don't know that. When we talk about HBCUs, the largest funding, if you are a HBCU grad, the largest funding for HBCUs, they don't have to go back annually anymore for money because they are funded biannually, not where they have to go and beg for hoping that funding would be approved for them. That is this president. Under Obama administration, why is no one asking, you know, about the HBCUs that closed or the Parent Plus loans that they put in place that jeopardized many black HBCUs, historical, you know, colleges? Why is that? My school, St. Paul's College, Lawrenceville, Virginia, they allowed mm-hmm. to be signed to a Chinese firm. You know, 200-plus acres sitting in Lawrenceville, a HBCU. Since 1900, that Green Hills. allow for the Episcopal Church to sell to a Chinese-owned company.
Wow.
And from 2015. And so for 2015 to now, all they've not done anything with it. So these are these things. You know, 9-plus black-owned banks that closed under Obama, and which chokehold additional access to capital. And, you know, this president just put $10 billion into community development, you know, investment corporations locally. But when you look at your community right now that's on fire, that was burnt down after George Floyd, that area was an opportunity investment zone. They burned down a new project for affordable housing. So when you talk about the left needing affordable housing, they just burned it down.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. But again, we come to this dilemma where, and I said it earlier, that generationally, that's what we're trained to do. Some of us, you know,
right,
it's an
oxymoron.
Yeah, we're to burn down all this stuff. I want to let people know that the call-in lines are open if you have a question for Ms. C.J. Jordan or myself, or just want to make a comment. If you pick up your beautiful cell phone, your rotary dial, whatever you're using right now in 2020, and you dial 347-426-3900, you'll get right to us. Again, your rotary dial, cell phone, push button, or even Alexa. You can dial 347-426-3904 and be connected right to the Independent Business News Network. I just want to interject. I want to congratulate my co-host, Jonathan Mason from Our Black News. He's been on the front line covering the protests like it's nobody's business. I mean, he's been doing a great job. We appreciate him. The videos, the live feeds are amazing, up close and personal. And there's no one that does it better. And Mr. Mason, I appreciate you. I appreciate the time you're putting into this. And I look forward to getting here and doing a show with you this coming Saturday at 9:30 on Our Black News. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. If anyone has a question, we're actually going to be going until 8 o'clock tonight. And that's because of Blog Talk Radio, but we'll forgive them this time. And we have about 17 minutes into the show. So, CJ, what does the new normal look like? Do black Minnesotans participate? Well, let me back up. I'm jumping way ahead of myself, but I'm really excited about this. Well, not really excited, but damn, it's happening again. Excited. So these communities, these neighborhoods are burned down, okay? The Midway, I mean, downtown Minneapolis areas, the liquor store, the Foot Locker, a lot of things damaged, gas stations, little mini grocery corner stores, massage parlors. Oh, my God. I mean, everything is kind of messed up. So I hear that, well, in the Star Tribune listed that Mayor Jacob Fry said he's going to be asking the feds and the state for $50 million. And that's not enough, we know that. But do black people participate in the rebuilding of Minnesota, or is the mainstream going to continue to punish some of us, most of us, all of us, in one way, shape, or form for these incidents?
Well,
what do you think?
What's
your thought?
I think the first thing, again, for community healing is if by tomorrow morning the NAACP and the city have not launched its own independent investigation to civil rights violations, then you, Don, need to call for their resignation. That's the first thing, because that begins the process of community healing. The feds are doing their investigation. The state just said that they were doing what is wrong with the mayor and the local NAACP. That's what the NAACP was founded for, and the city has its own board. So if they're not going to do it, get rid of them, call for their resignation, for new leadership to go in so that there can be fair. And the reason I'm saying that is because you saw the autopsy and you saw the language of the DA you know, the DA coming out questioning and trying to give some gray area on why George Floyd died. So
yeah.
That's why they need to do that. The second thing is, again, the president, you know, campaigned, but he implemented opportunity investment zones. That area is opportunity investment zones, and it allows for, you know, P3 partnerships, public-private partnerships. And so I think now is an opportunity from you to work with the administration, bring in Scott Turner. He's a good friend of mine, a former board member of mine who oversees that executive council for the president. Have him come on to an investment zones, how they can work with you, local business leaders, and finding that P3 structure to rebuild the neighborhood. And look at how you can put in, because I know you got that brilliant mind of yours, local investment clubs, so that even those who are might not have the capital can be part of the process of rebuilding so that they can have some ownership in the game. And I think those are the things that need to be done. But I think there's that serious conversation that if they don't do these independent investigations on for civil rights violation, then you have no one representing the local voice of the community in which you have city council and the mayor. And what are you paying your dues to the NAACP for if they're not going to, i.e., call for the investigation independent?
I need to respond to what you just said. CJ, I'm tired. And I don't want to get involved with the NAACP anymore. I don't want to even pick up the phone and say anything. From 2005 to like 2015, almost 10 years, Mr. Edwards and I sat in every freaking meeting we could over North and St. Paul, wherever. If I couldn't go, he would go. And if he could go and I couldn't, you know, he'd go. And we'd sit there and listen. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the Minneapolis NAACP, but within the last 15, 20 years, they were denied access to any money, no financial transactions at all whatsoever. When you sign up for the Minneapolis NAACP, you have to go to the national website, type the local branch number in, and send your money. Now, I've
seen
people here.
And that's because of mismanagement.
Yes, but I've seen people here collect money, memberships, on behalf of the NAACP. Now, I can't tell you where that money is. I remember back in the day, you saw NAACP ledgers of how much money they had, where it was going. I haven't seen one of those in 20 years.
Okay,
so,
well, since they are in a receivership position, then immediately tomorrow, then you call on the mayor.
Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead.
To have, you know, where's his announcement of independent investigation stay on him. But, again, I think you should work on with your voice and the voice that you've been in the community, and I will connect you to Scott Turner so you can talk about and how the Opportunity Investment Zone resources are able to come into the community and how that process can be a tool for rebuilding, even with the churches and those church leaders, small business owners, and, you know, come together, investment clubs, P3, public-private partnership. It is also an opportunity if the schools are failing, can we have better quality education through choice in education? Most people don't realize that Black women are the largest group or cohort that are homeschooling their kids. But you can't homeschool. It's difficult to homeschool your kids when everything is shut down, because the learning experience is only in your home. And again, it's very difficult if you don't own a home to just be confined into apartment building. So I think, and I will connect you to many different people at the Department of Education within the White House that you can have to come in and really talk about what are good policies, how can we change the community, work together, but it's also going to be incumbent to ask how can – I do believe you have a black Republican from that area that is running, a small business owner.
Yes.
Get the – you know, hold that community civic forum, take the lead so that policy differences can be there, and let's begin to work on – invite the, you know, the GOP chair and other office holders down there to figure out how can we work to rebuild the area. Because, again, we don't hold offices down there. No black Republicans, and to my knowledge, no white Republicans are office holders there. So invite some of those elected Republicans that sit on some of those committees, invite them to that area and do a walkthrough and sit with so they can figure out how can we go back to our committees and spearhead how to help rebuild the community. Let's look at those Republican business owners, P3 partner to rebuilding. That is what we're going to have to start to do, because we can't solve the problem. Government is not going to be able to solve the problem by itself. It's taxpayers' money. So it can't And so the state is already hurting economically on the COVID-19 shutdown. And so all of the business from that are not going to be able to come back online. So we got to have a bipartisan solution. And I think you are the right person for the right time that can bring those Republican elected leaders and show, okay, here's a policy difference. What have we gotten for the last 30 years? You know, chaos and destruction and decay. Should we have the opportunity to sit kneecap and listen to Republicans, black Republicans, white Republicans, and figure out how they can rise and make all boats rise together? Because we can. If we're talking about solving the racial equality, solving the economic equality, yes, we can do it by ourselves. But again, even doing the civil rights movement, and it was the reason why I sent you my picture with my mentor, Bob Brown. Even doing the assassination of Dr. King, the one thing that Andrew Young said to me when I had the opportunity to staff him, he said, look, even in the midst of chaos, we went and met with Richard Nixon. We sat with Richard Nixon because Bob Brown said it was important, and we wanted to solve the problems in our community. That is how we got the most outside of Reconstruction. We got the most as a black community. We got the Minority Business Development Agency. We got the Small Business Administration. We got the EEO. We got affirmative action. We got all of those things working with the Nixon administration and my mentor, Bob Brown, and black Republicans and Democrats who were civic leaders, who were forward-thinking civic leaders. It's the same thing that we got doing the civil rights movement in 1964 and 1965. Same thing. It is the same thing that we got during Reconstruction when Lincoln went to Richmond when the city was burnt down. He stepped there and the slaves came to him and he said, do not kneel for me, look to God. But it was there in Richmond when the city had burnt down, he put forth his Reconstruction plan. And this president has been asking for a infrastructure bill in which the Democrats will not come to the table to work with him on. He has asked for lower prescription drugs, which they haven't worked with him on. So he did an executive order. Well, not an executive order, but he did through a secretary memorandum, work with private sector to get insulin lowered to $35 a piece versus $200 a pop go get insulin.
Wow.
So
hey, DJ, we have a call. We want to get caller in before the show here. Let's see if they actually want to say anything. Caller, last four. 0171, you're live on the Independent Business News Network. What's your comment?
Well, Don, thanks for taking my call. This is Mr. M. I live in close proximity to the Cup Foods, and I have been you know, what can I say? That's been part of my life every day since this happened. And I really like what your guest is saying about working together, because in the 60s and 70s, those things happened because we were together and we were strong and we worked together. And somehow our strength has dissipated. So there's going to be a lot of work to be done, and it's not going to be done by one person or two person or three or four groups. Now, I'm going to give you a quick example here. I know you have just a little bit of time, but, you know, this white privilege thing, it's an inbred thing. A quick example, I have a cousin, worked for the city of Minneapolis in a labor job, maybe 5 years, went to school, got his correction, you know, training, became a Minneapolis policeman. Because he had it's a civil service job, and because he had seniority, he got the cushy job at the head of the county government center. All the white officers were outraged. He just got here white as he got it because he's qualified, he has the seniority, and he's playing by the rules. See, they want the rules to always be skewed toward them. I mean, look at Edina, Eagan, Apple Valley. Places have police forces. Or would a graduate from a school, black man, go out there and be on their police force unless they knew them or lived out there? I doubt it. But yet they can come out into our city and not have the care and concern and work with all the people to make our city better. And the last thing I want to say is I had a chance to meet Mr. Lacey Johnson, and I think he's got a great program. And I say that because I had been contacted. I have a nonprofit, Minnesota's Black Community Project. I got contacted by a group out of New York called the Fatherly Program. They interviewed me, and I looked at their site. They do training and startups for young people. And they had on their website, you'll see them with digital media, all the things, Don, that you know that I don't know when it comes to technology, because that's really not my game, but I got to get up on it to survive in this world. But I say that to say that technology, and most kids learning that and being exposed to that. I mean, even the guy that comes out here to fix my heater, he has a little computer. He can diagnose with that computer. He can contact and find parts. This is the world, and we need to be a part of it. And, Don, you know that, and being an educator, I'm just talking to the choir, talking to you, a man after my own heart. And basically that's my comments for right now.
Hey, thanks for calling, man. Appreciate it, M. We have less than 2 minutes left of the show. CJ, would you take 30 seconds and say something and help people get in touch with you if you'd like that, or a website or whatever you want?
Well, feel free to email me at egpearl@yahoo.com. That is my email. But you can fight the power, but fight the power with thought, with energy, but not with violence, but with love and with structure. That's how we've done things. Bring God into it, because without him, we can't accomplish anything. And that's what we've done. That's how we got through slavery and each one of our different challenges that we overcame as a race of a people. So, and all white people are not bad. Embrace them, challenge the system, and don't continue to vote for the same people if they're not bringing effective change into your community. Give us Republicans an opportunity to earn your vote.
And with less than a minute left of the show, we have another caller, but I can keep going because they will just go into podcast mode. Caller 4364, do you have a question for myself or a comment or CJ or anything? Go ahead.
Sure. Hi, good evening. Hello, Don. This is Michael. How are you? Hey, thanks very much for the invite. Quite the fascinating show. And I'm especially happy to hear, you know, this wide perspective of opinions, et cetera. I do take some exception to some of the comments that I've heard earlier. There's been this inference that President Trump is trying to do things and the Democrats are standing in the way. I wish we wouldn't try to pitch this conversation as a Republicans good, Democrats bad. Because during the prior administration, the senator from Michigan put forth an infrastructure bill, and Mitch McConnell, and the Republicans blocked it. So, I mean, this notion that we should tie our fate to any particular party, I think it's foolish. I think we can be disappointed by both of them. I think we should put forth an agenda, and we should work with both sides to see that agenda accomplished. But we shouldn't believe that that salvation lies with any particular party. Thanks.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Salvation is only through God.
Yeah, and Paula, I'm glad you called in, because it's very interesting that you say that. And we have talked before. I know who this is. He's a friend of the show, personal friend. And there are things that happen. I remember the Council on Black Minnesotans. Now they're the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage. But you had a guy named Ed McDonald who put together over a $2 million legislative agenda for the Black Minnesota community, for our community. It was more than $200 million. I mean, agriculture, to support all these pop-up gardens, just tons of stuff, business, brick and mortar, startup, education, cultural enrichment. I mean, this particular package, legislative agenda, had everything to help everybody in Black Minnesota. What happened was he brings it to Governor Dayton, because he has, as the executive director of the Council on Black Minnesotans at the time, you had full access to walk right over to Governor Dayton. So he did. Governor Dayton is thrilled. He goes, wow, this is good stuff, you know. But I need to pass it by Senators Bobby Joe Champion and Senator Jeff Hayden and Rena Moran. Cool, not a problem. We'll go right ahead and do that. About a month later, they called in state rep at the time, Carolyn Lane, Democrat out of Columbia Heights at the time. And they sat down and had pushed her to the front of the line to be the first author. They authored a bill to change the name of the Council on Black Minnesotans to the Council of Minnesotans of African Heritage, to get rid of Ed McDonald and make him reapply for his job. They were never going to hire him again. And totally broke that down. But what they destroyed the foster care programming that the council was doing to have gather families to get in line and take and make sure they had these black kids in black homes with black parents, grandparents, etc. It was a huge thing they had together. And our three black elected officials destroyed that. So when the caller calls in and says that, hey, you know, Republican good, Democrat bad, or someone calls in and says Democrat bad, Republican good, I always think in back of my mind, there's enough of us Negroes in this town to do anything that we want to do if we did it collectively. Period. So there's no one good. There's no one bad. You know, it's just that this situation is politics at its ugliest. I remember when Obama was in office, you know, I saw what the Republican Party, I saw they would, and excuse me, Ms. CJ, I just have to say this. Just plain. I saw people that did not support the lovely black couple of Obama, Michelle and Barack Obama, Photoshop a dick on Michelle Obama and say she was a man. I saw things get ugly from the conservative Republican wild base. Just like I'm seeing people doing crazy wild stuff. Even the mainstream media has taken it to a whole new level of engagement, of attacking. But so did the media, the right-leaning media, when Obama was in office. So I'm not seeing much of a difference. I'm seeing one body and two heads. One body, two heads.
Mm-hmm. No, I get
and
all
so
of that. I don't disagree with that. And I condone those actions. What I am clearly saying is this. We have our inner cities across this country for the last 50 years. We've had controlling those cities And then we've had black elected Democrats controlling those cities and on councils and on school boards. And there has not been any improvement and forwardness for our people. And we cannot demonize black Republicans anymore, those of us who sit and have the opportunity to move legislative policy forward that benefit our community. And we also must hold those black elected leaders accountable. When they ran, it was because we didn't have representation. We hadn't had black representation since Reconstruction. And those were black Republicans that moved things forward. Then the 60s came, and therefore we got black representation for as mayors, city councilmen, and so forth. Where did the disservice and the disconnect come about between having black elected officials and them serving the people who put them in office? And they must, too, be held accountable. Cornel West said, black faces in high places did not deliver during the 8 years that Obama was in office. I didn't say it. He said it.
Yeah, and you're absolutely correct. And I'm not, I don't want people to get it twisted. I'm not going to dislike Obama because of his politics, because him being elected and serving 8 years was historic. It should have happened a long damn time ago. Okay, should have been a black woman. Should have been a Hispanic Latino man or woman. This should have been a Native American, really, from the jump. Okay, but that has not happened yet. So you have all this politics being played out. You have a huge division between right and left, black people, white people, black people, black people, and people will not. They have selective amnesia. Excuse me, I cut the grass today, and my hay fever is killing me. But you have selective amnesia, and I'm going over a little bit here, but that's okay. And they're not really listening to anything other than talking points. Now, myself, for me, I know for me that I can't vote for Joe Biden. But as it stands right now, I'm having trouble going into the booth for Trump. Okay? So I'm an outlier right now. I'm sitting there, and I'm trying to figure out, okay, I voted for Trump in 2016 because he was going to win. And for every president that's ever been elected in the United States since I was 18 years old and started voting, I don't care if they were Democrat or Republican, if I thought they were going to win, I'd vote for them. And they win. I have a great record. I'm a little troubled right now. I'm a little troubled about the rhetoric. You know, and just a little bit. I mean, I I'm not on shaky ground. I don't have shaky rubber legs. I'm very firm. I have thick skin. But what troubles me are my brothers and sisters that continue to see the same stuff locally. Let's forget about Trump. Let's forget about Biden for a minute. Let's talk about Minnesota. Let's talk about St. Paul. Let's talk about Minneapolis. Let's talk about how much money has gone into North Minneapolis since 2005, and the circumstances for those people remain worse than they were in 2005.
Right.
But the nonprofit go ahead. It's fact. Go ahead. Say something, please, Ms. CJ. I'm sorry.
And again, that is the failure of local leadership, because all politics are local. We are not getting and seeing the change, effective change that we're supposed to have, and we're electing white folks and black folks that look like us, to give them an opportunity. We shouldn't give them 20 years to continue to run and not bring resources. One of the things that my grandfather used to tell me, I grew up on a farm in the South, and we didn't know we were poor until the folks came with the census to tell us we were poor. We grew our own food. We had our fruit trees. We had our little, you know, meat in the back. I was 16 before I got indoor running water, and I was 16 before I went to a grocery store. So, and when I say this census is important, the one thing, it determines the amount of money that comes back to your community. And the fact that we have a generation of African-Americans that don't want to fill it out, two, who are African American and want to check anything other than black, right? It dilutes the resources coming back to our community. It really does. And when it does come back locally, we don't scrutinize and hold our elected officials accountable on the resources that's supposed to come back to our community. No. Again, when we came out there in 2000, yeah, go ahead.
Every time I go down this path, I lost a friend yesterday from 20 that I've had a friend for this. She's been my friend for 25 years, if not more. She's a great person. She's a PhD. She writes, and we couldn't agree on politics. And I told her, I says, hey, you believe what you believe, but you can't call anybody this, this, or that because, you know, some of us don't have skeletons in our graveyard. I mean, in our closet. We have a graveyard in our closet. I just screwed up my joke again. Anyway, and I says that you have to decide what's right for you. I have two young kids. I'm a black man. I know police are killing black men. Do I want to get killed? Do I want my two sons, my two black sons, to be killed by police? No. So what am I going to do? Well, I'm not down at the state capitol. I'm not the group of black people that go there on photo op day and sit there and smile with these elected officials and give them nothing, you know. But I know how to use the reviser's office. I just submitted something to a senator, local senator here, to change veterans' preference in the state of Minnesota because veterans' preference does not include teachers. And that's ridiculous. You know, if we get fired, there's no protection. If we get laid off for no disability, you know. And so with that said, there's a huge challenge here in Minnesota. Minnesota, you have folks here wanting to start a race war between whites and blacks. You know, you have people here that are pimping the system, that are telling Governor Walz, shaky legs I call him, that we need this. We need that. And the minute they get some money, you will not see them again until the next person. See, the funny thing here is Minnesota. You got Minnesota Nice. Then you have the other Minnesota Nice, separate and unequal. So you have some folks that are going to give you some money from the state legislature to get you the hell out of their face. And you're never going to see these folks again. And a lot of white people are upset in Minnesota right now about this Floyd killing. They're really upset, and it's really good to be upset right now. But you know what? They're going to be upset until it happens again, until we decide to get into the state legislature, start getting people in that should represent us. Rena Moran should not be representing St. Paul, okay? I know a lady by the name of Ms. Austin who should be representing St. Paul. Jeff Hayden maybe shouldn't be representing this. You know, because when you are elected, like I was in the Army, and I'm a soldier, okay? I followed orders. I did everything they said. Came time for me to come up for leadership, to be a corporal, I accepted those responsibilities. I know that my responsibilities as a corporal to make sure that my platoon, my 8, 9, 10, 15 guys were okay, that I was serving them and made sure that they got chow, they got sleep, they got breaks, they had bullets, they had the weapon clean, they had it brought back to the armory, their bunks was clean, their locker were clean. Just the stuff we did when there wasn't war going on, training, you know, and that was my responsibility as that particular appointed individual. So we have, let's flashback, let's look at our elected leaders. And I'm talking about the majority of them here in just Minnesota. We're not talking about Trump, Biden, none of that crap.
Right.
What happens here is that they turn to celebrities. Okay? These wing nuts, okay, all of a sudden, I mean, I'm not mad at no brother with a hustle. Trust me, I'm not mad. Go ahead, have your tussle, make your thing. Do what you need to do. Okay? But if you're going to run a nonprofit agency and you're supposed to help black men and women, people of color, get jobs, and I don't know what that people of color is anyway, but any color, get jobs, and you're clocking $225,000 a year, and the people in that community that you're supposed to be serving are still poor, you got a problem. But getting back to elected officials, that celebrity status, you are not a celebrity. Yes, you might have celebrity standing because you got elected by all these people. A lot of people buy Cardi B records. I haven't purchased a Cardi B record, but I love me some Cardi B all day. Okay? So, with that said, why do we run and cuddle up under that celebrity status here with these celebrity, with these politicians that are, should be serving us? That's part of the black community's problem. I understand it. I get the psychology behind it. We've never had that before. So, yeah, you're Prince in the St. Paul State Capitol. Okay? You're singing Dirty Mind. You're singing Sexuality because you're, you know, you're famous now because you black man. You got elected. Black woman, you got elected. You're the first ones to kind of do that. We're first few. And we need to change our mindset. We need to demand. These politicians have to listen to what we want, Republican or Democrat. I'm not praising or waving the Republican flag at all whatsoever because I have my challenges now with their
– and I get that. And I get
go
all
ahead.
Of that done. And, but it goes back again to not just a celebrity. It is holding those accountable and making sure – that if they can't come back into the community, because right now what I see it and the way I see it, if you, we don't run these cities. Let's be honest. Republicans, we do not run the cities. We don't oftentimes get an opportunity to be invited into the community to have a dialogue. So I look at it as a strategist, as, you know, using taxpayers' money as walk-around money to where, hey, it's election time. We're going to give you some pocket change to go do, you know, hand out some signs to do this thing so we can get elected. And then here's a little check to slap on your back for $100,000. And we're going to be happy with that. And we go away. And then we don't see that black person or white person again until it's election time again in October. And it's a repeated cycle. And we don't force them to show back up to ask for our vote. We must stop that. It calls leadership and accountability, and we need to make sure that anybody that has the opportunity to want to serve the public, the taxpayer, be they Green Party, Republican Party, Democratic Party, get a chance to come into the community. But now is the opportune time to recalibrate if these historical organizations are not serving the local community, it is time to put new leadership in that's going to serve the community or establish new organizations that supplant these historical organizations that are not serving the interests of the local community. And I implore you to look up, put up opportunity investment zones for your listening audience so they can see the census tract that are were affected by the riots in your city and begin to have the dialogue, you, Don, of the business leaders to figure out how do we have a formulated, conscious P3 partnership to bring these small and minority businesses back online. What is it going to take? And then work with those major corporations to do it.
And see, and a lot of people don't know that in closing and wrapping up, CJ, because we're like, oh, let me see how far over we are. I'm just playing around answering some of the stuff on social media here. But, yeah, we're like 8 minutes or 19 minutes over, but that's okay because it goes directly to the podcast and everybody that's listening can still listen. But when you say stuff like these kind of zones and things like that, I understand that, and I think that's a very important piece. But what a lot of people don't know, and this is from a lot of research that a guy by the name of Lenny Chisholm did a lot of research on Minnesota, MnDOT, Department of Administration, Department of Civil Rights, State, and there's some interesting dynamics that are going on. And I don't know if anybody understands this, but there are black contractors in the state of Minnesota that work on roads and highways. There are companies that have black-owned companies that have a labor force of 50 to 100 or more that can go take 50 wheelbarrows, load up a pile of dirt, and move it a mile and dump it off and go back and get the rest. So you have all these units within the state of Minnesota that could collaborate. Because if you work on – if you work and you pay taxes in the state of Minnesota and you drive on their land, their bridges, their roads, their highways, whatever, you should have the opportunity to work for the state or be contracted with the state. And I remember this one instance that her name was Mary something another for the MnDOT, Minnesota Department of Education, signed off on $63 million. And I'm saying this to say that state of Minnesota, Department of Administration, all these people are out of compliance as it pertains to dealing with black organizations, black companies, black contractors, black people in general. Of course, Native American, et cetera, down the list, Asian, down the list. But anyway, MnDOT has one of the many federal grants they get. People just don't get money one time for the feds. It comes in parcels. It's like Christmas for them. So this time they got $63 million. And Lenny has this data. I have it on my laptop. If you're interested, I can send it to you. Out of $63 million, they gave Asian community contractors zero, Hispanic Latino zero. They gave one black contractor $700 out of $63 million. $700. And then white women got more than $1.5 million as minority contractors. And the rest went to white men.
And they're not minority. Right. White women are not minority. So here's
the policy. Go ahead. I'm going to let you talk. Let me just say this. The policy created by our politicians know that white females are not minorities, but yet they hesitate to go change the language because of how it might look or because of how they might be rejected, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's craziness, but go ahead and then we'll close out the
play. Well, here's the thing. Here's the nuance of it. Based on the population of the individual city that was affected, it is a majority-minority district. It is time, again, to hold your elected leaders accountable. One, I'm calling tonight on your program, if the mayor does not launch an investigation, independent civil rights investigation, then he needs to resign, as well as the director of the civil rights office. That's number one. Number two, I want the mayor to come forth with not a fair share, but a minority purchasing agreement so that minority and owned businesses opportunity to do business with the city. And he needs to come with that, not too much from now. He needs to do that now. I'm hoping that you will talk to Scott Turner, because the opportunity investment zones are already in place. But now having his information on how the federal government is looking to partner and to bring those federal resources locally to help lift and move those opportunity investment zones from drawing boards to reality. And now is a perfect time, even though the city is under distress, now is a perfect time to bring folks together and figure out how the opportunity investment zone resources can be leveraged to help rebuild your cities that have been burned by protesters. Those are things I think is going to be the most immediate. But the other thing is really forcing the governor to open up the state so business can get moving, so people can go to work to pay their bills, but also call for a moratorium on foreclosures to give people enough time to get back to work, to get some revenue into their pockets, and open the schools back up come fall. It is these things, because you saw the mental health suffering of individuals from watching the video. There is another mental health burden laid on top from COVID-19, not just from the death of it, but from being locked in their homes for almost 3 months.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some mental health drugs that are on shortages. So we got to open it up to get people out there. We got to.
Yeah, and I agree. And with that said, it's been really great. I'm going to have to close out here on Blog Talk Radio before they shut me down. Again, we'd like to thank Ms. C.J. Jordan. We'll try to have you back on Saturday via calling in like this with my co-host Jonathan Mason. Mason, if he's not still out protesting, I mean, we can talk for an hour perfectly if he can't make it. So let's find out what happens. I just tweeted the mayor and just told him, you know, what we just talked about, and I will contact you off here. But there's a lot of things that we need to do in this city, and I would like to work with the Black community, with my people, to be better and to deal with some of these legislative policy issues that are not being taken care of. I know it's a big misdirection right now with the killing of Mr. Floyd, who should not be dead. That should have never happened. It just screwed up everything along with COVID. And now we're finding out, you know, that the numbers aren't spiking. I mean, it's only been a couple of days, a week or so since protesting started. But in 3 weeks from now, if the numbers for COVID-19 are not spiking, we need to question the Minnesota Department of Health and Governor Walz and what they're telling us. Because
we need to question Dr. Fauci.
Yeah, 90% of the people dying in Minnesota are in nursing homes. They're not in high schools. They're not in elementary schools. They are in nursing homes. And with some of the protocols in effect, the mask, the gloves, the sanitizer, whatever, we can safely return to a semi-normal in the fall. With that said, I'd like to thank my special guest, Ms. C.J. Jordan, calling here. And it was cool. I love having you. We got to get your Zoom working because I'm pretty sure people want to see you and I want to see you. And this is really powerful on Zoom. But we'll figure that out together. At a later date.
It wasn't taking my number.
What's that?
I say it wouldn't take my ID, but I'll be ready. We'll try it again.
I have a solution for that, Ms. CJ, that we're going to work on here next time. It's way easier. But until then, I'm searching here for James because James needs to go home and take us on home so we can go.
Put your bags up.
Hey.
Say it louder.